Well, if the city of Smyrna was big and beautiful and splendid, the church was absolutely the opposite. It was poor, it was afflicted. It was plagued by persecution and slander. The original word for affliction speaks of being hard pressed on every side, literally having the life squeezed or crushed out of this small church. If you can kind of think a little bit about a lemon or an orange, when you squeeze it, squeeze all of the juice out. That was something like the impact of what was happening to this little church. They were particularly being persecuted by the Jews. Christianity had come out of Judaism, and the synagogue had become antagonistic towards the church and Christians in this place in Smyrna. You might remember me saying just now that the city of Smyrna was particularly loyal to Rome. It was a centre of worship to Caesar. And knowing that Jesus was Lord meant that the Christians there wouldn't bow down and declare that Caesar was Lord. They refused to partake in empire worship. They refused to compromise for their beliefs. And so the Jews began to slander the Christians. They began to spread false and damaging rumors, meaning that there were attacks of persecution on this small church. And it was the church that probably, it was the persecution that probably made this church and these Christians poor. Because it's probably thought that because of the persecution, they couldn't secure employment, that nobody would trade with them in their day-to-day businesses. It's clear that this church in Smyrna was crushed and hard-pressed on every side. They were having the life sucked out of them. And it would have been very easy for them to compromise. But actually, we learn that's the very thing they didn't do. In fact, they held fast. They were prepared to suffer for upholding the gospel and for their faith. And so they received unqualified praise from Jesus. They're one of only two churches out of the seven that has Jesus has no criticism for them at all, only praise and encouragement. This church stands as a reminder for all of us that we are called to stand firm and maybe even suffer for our faith. Actually, if you think about it, this call to suffer weaves all the way through Jesus' teaching. Think about the very last beatitude, talks about being persecuted. Jesus tells his disciples, in this world, you will have trouble. We see numerous examples, if you think about going into the Acts of Apostles and forward into the New Testament, numerous examples of people who suffered and were persecuted for their faith. If you look at the New Testament, suffering is an indispensable mark of every Christian and every true Christian church. Of course, I don't know whether we truly know what it means to suffer for our faith here in the UK. We may need to stand up for what we believe at times. We may be ridiculed and marginalised for being a Christian, but not to the extent that this church, and indeed many churches throughout the world today, will suffer for their faith, even to the point of death. Our intercessory prayers reminded us of sisters and brothers that we need to pray for who are suffering in this way right at this very moment. I wonder whether one of the challenges of suffering is that it tempts us to compromise our faith, to dilute the gospel. But here the church at Smyrna refused to do that. They were prepared to suffer accordingly. And so I wonder whether this church prompts us, first of all, to ask the question, are there any areas in my life where I am compromising my faith? Are we tempted at times to take the easy option out? What are the distinctives for us as gospel people as we think about our neighbours and friends who might not be believers? In the midst of their suffering, Christ comes to this church and encourages them both in the present suffering that they are experiencing, but also about the future suffering that they will experience. He warns them about the future suffering. He talks about this 10 days of suffering, and that's thought to be, figuratively speaking, about a short, limited, but very intense persecution that would come. As Christ encourages this little church in their suffering, we see one tiny phrase that actually is part of every letter in this series in Revelation, where it comes up time and time again. But I think these two words would have provided comfort to this small church in Smyrna. Jesus says, "I know." As they were literally clinging on to their faith for dear life, Jesus says, "I know what you're going through. I know your hardships, your struggles, and your persecution. I know your poverty. I know the slander that's been thrown against you." The living Lord Jesus Christ himself knows what they are going through. Imagine the comfort that must have brought this tiny church and these Christians. Maybe we've come to church today feeling hard pressed on every side. Maybe we are feeling crushed. Maybe we are suffering from ridicule or hardship because of our faith. Maybe we're the only Christian in our class or at work, in the neighborhood, within our family. Or maybe the very real pressures of life are pressing in. Maybe we're anxious about the future. Maybe we've got very real financial pressures, work pressures, health pressures, and so the list could go on and on and on. If so, I want us to hear the words of Jesus today as he comes to each one of us and simply says, "I know." You know, sometimes the greatest need when we are struggling is to find somebody to journey with us, somebody who understands. Jesus' knowledge of each one of us and our circumstances isn't some distant, hands-off relationship, but actually Jesus is up close and personal. He's got a detailed understanding of all that we are facing in this week ahead, the things that are on our very minds at the moment that are causing us anxiety. He comes along us and he cares. So practically, how does this church, this persecuted church, stay faithful? How do we stay faithful in those times of anxiety and affliction when we feel crushed and hard-pressed on every side? It's very clear from this letter to this small church that we can only remain faithful through the power and the strength of the risen Jesus himself. You might remember that I said a couple of weeks ago when I introduced the series that at the start of each letter there is a description of Jesus that is taken from chapter 1 of Revelation. And each of the descriptions particularly mirrors the situation that the church finds itself in. So here the description of Jesus given to this church is that Jesus is the first and the last. He's the one who died, but also the one who came to life again. He's the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end. Jesus comes to this church and he comes to each one of us with the most frequent command in the Bible: do not be afraid. They and we can be faithful in suffering. We can choose faith over fear because of who Jesus is and all that he has done. Jesus is the one that holds his church and his people in his hands. Jesus is eternal. He was there at the beginning, and we have absolute confidence that he will be there at the end. Jesus is unchanging. God is ultimately in control, despite how it may seem. And we have that great assurance that Jesus is the one who died and who rose again. The one who calls for faithfulness is the one, even to the point of death, is the one who experienced death himself, was obedient to death, even death on a cross, and overcame it. If we are to be faithful, we need to do everything we can to keep the right perspective in life so we can keep trusting. I want us to think for a moment about a zoom on a camera. And if we've got an object that we're taking a photograph of and we zoom in, we just zoom into a particular bit of detail. We can see that particular object in a lot of detail when we're just looking at a little bit of it. We can see that little bit, but we can't see anything else. And you know, sometimes when we're feeling hard-pressed, when we're anxious, when we are being persecuted, it's really easy to zoom in on a particular bit of detail. We can struggle to see the bigger picture, and it's very easy then for fear to set in. But if we are called to be faithful, we are called to zoom out and to look at the bigger picture. We are called to zoom out and look for God in the situation and his perspective. To see the cross in the midst of our suffering. To remind ourselves that the one who calls us to be faithful is the one who suffered himself, who suffered pain and abandonment, rejection and betrayal, the one who was crushed for our iniquities. When we zoom out, sometimes the issues and the struggles are still the same. They are still really real. But when we zoom out, we bring the possibility of God into the equation and his perspective. God often sees things in a very different way to the way that the world sees it. And we see it in this example of this church. They're seen as poor and afflicted. But actually Jesus talks about them being rich in Christ and in joy. This little church might be struggling on the outside, but internally they could say, "It is well with my soul." So finally, we come to the end of the letter. And as with all the letters, there is a great promise contained in it, that those who are faithful will overcome and escape the second death and will receive the crown of life. We will all of us, except the generation that are living when Jesus comes back, we will all experience a bodily death. But Jesus says that the second death will only apply to those who don't trust in Jesus or believe in him. Instead, those who remain faithful will receive the crown of life. Don't know if you saw in the week the images of the state opening of Parliament. The Queen wasn't able to be there, and so when Prince Charles came in, they put a table, and on it they put the Imperial, I think it's called the Imperial State Crown. Don't know if anybody saw it, that image of the crown. And actually for me that is a great image. As I was thinking about preparing for this letter, it was a great image of this crown of life. Here it is. There's a picture of it, if you can see it on the screen. It has got a cross. Maybe the cross kind of turned a slightly different way. But I want us to keep that image in our mind. It resonated, this crown, with it resonated with this church in Smyrna, because the city was used to having athletic games, and at the end they would get a wreath or a crown. The winner would get a wreath or a crown. You know, the Christian life is like a race. It's often littered with pain and difficulty and suffering. But those of us who run it faithfully can be absolutely certain that at the end, Jesus will be there and will hold out to those who are faithful this great crown of life. It's a fantastic image for this letter and for us to end on as we think about faithful, being faithful in suffering and persecution, of running the race well and receiving the crown of life. So let's just be still for a moment.